uvacha, svai svayam bhuva samrat, riya putra svayam bhuva, prati labhya priyam patni, kim chakara tatho mune. Vidura said, O great sage, what did Swayambhuva, the dear son of Brahma, do after obtaining his loving wife? Charitam tasya raja rishir adirajasya sattamaha bruhi me shradhanaya vishvakshena shrayo hiso. O best of the virtuous, the original King of Kings, Manu, was a great devotee of the personality of Godhead, Hari, and thus it is worth hearing of his sublime character and activities. Please describe them. I am very eager to hear. Purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of the transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead and His pure devotees. In the absolute world, there is no difference in quality between the Supreme Lord and His pure devotee. Therefore, hearing the topics of the Lord and hearing the character and activities of the pure devotee have the same result, namely the development of devotional service. Vidura has approached Maitreya Rishi. For the development of his consciousness toward the ultimate goal of life. Of course, Vidura was already a perfect devotee, a dear friend of Lord Krishna. Yet, the nature of a great Vaishnav is to be very humble and to never think that one is great. Great Vaishnavas are always eager to receive the mercy and blessings of superior personalities. In fact, Vidura apparently had a much more intimate relationship with Krishna than Maitreya Rishi. Krishna instructed Maitreya Rishi, but for Vidura, Krishna would allow him to massage his feet, allow him to feed him. He was a very dear servant. But the devotees of the Lord, when they are actually filled with the mercy of Krishna, they reveal the innermost nature of their hearts, which is very humble, very sincerely eager to receive the mercy of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Vidura's inquiries from Maitreya Rishi are not just a show. They are genuine and sincere. They are coming from the core of his heart. Otherwise, why the great Acharya Shukadev Goswami Maharaj is spending so much of his narration describing this genuine exchange of transcendental devotion between Vidura and Srila Maitreya Rishi? The topics of the devotees of the Lord is none different than the topics of the Lord himself. This is being explained here by Shukadev Goswami, Suta Goswami, and Vidura. That a devotee of the Lord keeps Krishna always in the center of his or her life. Therefore, their life is a pastime of Krishna being enacted along with his devotee. You cannot separate Krishna from his devotees, and you cannot separate the devotees from Krishna. There is an eternal bond of affection between them. When Krishna left Vrindavan, he told the Brijvasis in a message that he sent back with Uddhava, actually, I never left Vrindavan. I cannot possibly leave Vrindavan. Your love has conquered me. I have apparently, in a physical state, left for Mathura, but actually, my heart is with you. My heart can never ever be separated from you. And my real presence is my heart. The true personality of myself is living within your hearts and living within the groves of Vrindavan. It is an expansion of myself that has left. In fact, Srila Sanatana Goswami describes how Krishna explained he only left Vrindavan because he wanted to increase the ecstasy of the unity of love between he and the residents of Vrindavan. Because when he was gone, the devotees would experience the remembrance of him all the more intensely. And in this way, they would increase their love and their service to the Lord, and Krishna was right there within their hearts accepting that service. So for the pure devotees, there is no question there can ever be separation from Krishna. And similarly, for Krishna, there's never separation from those devotees who have surrendered their lives to him. Thus, to hear the glories of great devotees is as purifying and instructive as directly hearing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna teaches the world through his devotees. And there are different classes of people who must be taught in different ways how to achieve the ultimate perfection of life. And therefore, Krishna, through varieties of devotees who live in various lifestyles, Krishna teaches the world how to become perfect through his various avatars. Just like we read of Kolavecha Sridhar, he was very simple, very poor man. There are many simple poor people in this world who do not have proper clothes, who do not have proper house, who are lean and thin because they're not even getting much food, who are ridiculed by the wealthy people of society for being useless, unproductive. Yet Kolavecha Sridhar demonstrated by his example, or should we say the Lord revealed through him, how one could be the absolutely most perfect human being and Vaishnava. One can be ecstatic in love of God and literally purchase the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his simple devotion, even in that situation. Great, great, kings and multi-millionaires, they cannot purchase Krishna. But Kolavecha Sridhar, he purchased Krishna. Lord Chaitanya showed him his own divine opulences. He would personally come to accept his banana leaves. Every day Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ate off the banana leaves given by Kolavecha Sridhar. Every day he would eat the pumpkin or squash that grew wild on the thatched grass roof of the home of Kolavecha Sridhar. And before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left the world of Navadvip to take sannyas, the last thing he ate was a preparation made of that squash. It was made into sweet rice by Sachimata that Kolavecha Sridhar gave him. So the Lord taught through him how one can be so simple and in such a poverty-stricken condition and yet not be greedy, not be eager for anything but devotional service, and be worshipped even by the greatest rishis, sages, and Vaishnavas. He taught through the life of Ramananda Rai how you can be a great big politician, very learned scholar, even do so many activities, but still be such a great devotee of the Lord. In this particular chapter, Vidura is very interested in hearing about Swayambhuva Manu because of what Krishna revealed through the example of Swayambhuva Manu. It is said, Mahajana Yena Gatasa Panta. One can achieve the ultimate perfection of life only by following in the footsteps of the Mahajans. There are 12 primary Mahajans, and anyone who follows in the footsteps of the Mahajans, we can follow in their footsteps and achieve the ultimate perfection of life. But we see these Mahajans have very variegated roles in their life in this world. And Swayambhuva Manu is one of these Mahajans. He is younger brother of the Kumaras. Very different examples they gave according to different particular types of people. Vidura wanted to hear of both. Lord Brahma gave birth to the four Kumaras. Now it's Lord Brahma's service to be the leader of all Prajapatis. That means he's supposed to populate the planets of the universe with the various species of life. So he told the Kumaras, you are my son? You do. You marry, you procreate, you become kings. The four Kumaras, they were by their own nature so detached, so unconcerned with anything except fixing their mind in the absolute truth. They refused to marry, they refused to take on this service. So Lord Brahma, like most fathers whose sons do this, we became very angry. But in his heart, he knew that they were right. He knew that they were pursuing a higher principle in life than he was asking them to do. Therefore, he restrained his anger. He didn't say anything. Because Brahma's a great person. He's a self-realized soul himself. So knowing that the four Kumaras were very, very highly realized soul pursuing the ultimate perfection of life, he understood they are right. But still, they're not helping me in my service. So he restrained his anger, and in the process of restraining his anger, that came out. That anger was released from between his eyebrows in the form of Rudra, or Lord Shiva. He gave also birth to Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu is equal to the Kumaras. They are both Mahajans. Brahma asked Swayambhuva Manu, please get married and help me procreate society and be king. Swayambhuva Manu was so humble, he said, yes, my father, of course. I will do anything you ask me to do. I'm surrendered to you. Whatever you want, I will do, my father. If you want me to get married, I will be happy to get married. If you want me to procreate and be king of mankind, I will certainly do. So Lord Brahma was very, very pleased with Swayambhuva Manu, who was married. But then what was his example? He was not just an ordinary father and husband and king. He was such a pure devotee of the Lord. He was exactly what Brahma wanted him to be. Brahma didn't want him to be getting married and just be a grihamedi, just materialistic person enjoying life in this material world. Brahma wanted him to get married and be a perfect example of grihastha in Krishna consciousness and be an example for the whole world to follow, to be a Mahajan. So when he took Brahma's instruction, he didn't take part without the rest. He took the whole instruction. You want me to marry? You want me to be king? You want me to have children? You want me to be a pure devotee? You want me to be centered completely around Krishna? I will do it all. Perfectly surrendered soul. It is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, whole chapter about how Swayambhuva Manu lived. He had a beautiful palace. He had so many servants and so many assistants, ministers. He was literally the king of mankind. But everything was centered around Krishna. His home was centered around the temple of Krishna. How, with such elaborate opulence and devotion, he worshipped the deity of Krishna in his home. Unbelievable what type of deity worship he performed. And he invited everyone to participate. Swayambhuva Manu, 24 hours a day he was remembering Krishna. This is how he managed his kingdom and his family. When he would take rest at night, he would lay down in his bed, and there would be Brahmins and Rishis just chanting the glories of Krishna's pastimes for him as he would go to sleep. And naturally, when you go to sleep in that atmosphere, he would just dream about Krishna's pastimes all night long. He wasn't just dull sleep. He was immersed in dreaming of Krishna's incarnations, Krishna's lila, Krishna's teachings. And then in the morning, just before the Brahma Muhurta hour, actually all night long, but especially in the morning, all night long, there would be people singing bhajans and kirtans for him. And then early in the morning, there would be beautiful, beautiful recitation of Krishna's glories. So he would wake up immediately hearing not just ordinary people, but great devotees with soft hearts, loving souls who actually loved him and loved Krishna. He wouldn't just hire professional Bhagavad Katha reciters. He had genuine devotees who were humble and sincere and surrendered to the Lord around him when he would wake up chanting the glories of the personality of Godhead. Surrounding his bed, Hare Krishna. And then he would take his bath, mark his body with the tilak, chant the names of the Lord, perform the puja of the Lord, give charity to the Brahmins and the devotees of the Lord. His whole life was simply pure devotional service, although he was leading the kingdom of mankind. And how did he raise his children? Great personality. He had a daughter, you know, her name was Devahuti. He raised his daughter so perfectly according to the Vedic principle of Krishna consciousness. She was a princess. He protected her so carefully so that no one could exploit her. Throughout her whole life, nobody could even look at her with their eyes with the desire to exploit. This is how kings protected their daughters in those days. Even for those who have gone to the Jaipur Yatra with us, you saw the wind palace, where there's these little windows with these carved stone lattice work, where you, if your eyes are right next to it, you can see through it, but otherwise you cannot see through it. So these were Vaishnav kings in Jaipur. They were actually the ones that protected the deities of Vrindavan. They worked so hard to go to Vrindavan to get these deities to come to Jaipur to protect them from Aurangzeb, the great Mughal ruler, who was trying to destroy everything that was sacred in Vrindavan. But in this wind palace, it is described, this is where the princesses, when they wanted to look and watch a procession that was coming down the main road or see the street, they would look through that so no one could see them. Hare Krishna. Why? Because even if a person looks at you with lust in their eye or another exploitative purpose, it's polluting. Today, ladies like to decorate themselves in such a way just so that men will look at them with lust in their eyes and exploit them. But actually, they're being contaminated by that association. When a person looks at you, their energy is coming right into you. Bzzz. If somebody looks at you with compassion, actually, you benefit greatly. If someone looks at you with a blessing, you get great blessing. If someone's looking at you with lust, they're actually polluting your heart by their very glance. So this is how fine and complete a father was in the Vedic system to protect his daughter from any type of exploitation. What to speak of how the father behaved and the mother behaved before their children, so that there was no question that they could have any other consciousness than pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness. A man and a woman would never, ever, ever have the slightest tinge of sense gratification before their children. Their children would just see them worshiping Krishna and doing seva. And their children, they'd grow up with such a pure heart. That is protection. Where are those days today? Prabhupada said, we send our children to schools, and God knows what happens to them in their schools. What they're educated is one thing, But what is the association? What type of glances? What types of environment? So we can understand how the Vedic culture was so very refined and high in its perfect spirituality. We cannot imitate that in the cities today. But we can try to follow in the footsteps of these great persons as far as possible. So Devahuti was completely protected. Swayambhuva Manu was multi-billionaire. He was so wealthy, you cannot even calculate. He was the king of humanity. But yet, it is the duty of a father to protect the daughter until she comes to a certain age, and then get his daughter married so that she can be protected by a proper man. This is one of the most crucial responsibilities of a father, is to see to it that his daughter is protected by a man in marriage. Therefore, in the Vedic system, as soon as a father gives birth through his wife to a daughter, immediately there's all kinds of responsibilities to think of her future. And the whole conception of dowry is nothing like it is today. Today there's these forced dowries and people burning each other because they don't get proper dowries, and it's complete perversion. The concept of dowry in the Vedic times was so spontaneous and so full of love and affection that the father's giving his daughter to another family to take care of out of affection for his daughter. He wants to show appreciation for this family for accepting her, for protecting her for the rest of her life. Therefore, he gives all sorts of wonderful, wonderful wealth and gifts to that family as a gratitude for accepting the responsibility of the daughter, and also to help them to maintain the daughter. It's not a cheap thing to maintain a woman, as most of you may know. When you have a Mataji in your house, it's not always so easy. You have to provide food, you have to provide clothing, you have to provide a place, you have to for the whole life. It's not that the father's just dropping a burden on the family. Take my daughter, she's yours. She's your problem now. No, this is my precious daughter, she's so dear to me. I want to help you in maintaining her throughout the life. This is my love for her and my gratitude to you, so take this. Take the best that I have with her. It was love. It was actual affection. It wasn't a rule. But as Kali Yuga progresses, even the nicest, sweetest, most enriched spiritual culture becomes degraded to just dry, mundane ritual. Not only that, but people exploit the sacred for their own greedy purposes. So what is the duty of human life? Atato brahma jigyasa. You have attained human life? Become Krishna conscious. Inquire into the absolute truth. The purpose of human life is not just material comforts. Thus, when it came to Swayambhuva Manu, great, great king, to marry his daughter, after perfectly protecting her, she was so pure, so chaste, she was such a great devotee of the Lord by being raised in this family where Krishna was everywhere. 24 hours a day, Krishna's glories and names were being chanted in her house. Her father was constantly humbling himself and serving great Vaishnavas and Brahmins. The whole kingdom was being enacted in such a way according to the rules of God. You have heard of Manu Samhita? The rules of God of how to live within society and even rule the state. So Devahuti was such a devotee. Swayambhuva Manu was thinking, who is the best man to marry to my daughter? And they selected Kardama Muni, Hare Krishna. Kardama Muni was not a big king. He was not a wealthy Kropati. He was a rishi living in the jungles. He didn't even have proper clothes. Deer skins or tree barks. He didn't even have a home. He slept under trees in the jungle. He didn't have any money. He would just eat whatever fell from the trees. Who would want to marry their daughter to somebody like this? A Vaishnava, Hare Krishna. Because I understood, this will make my daughter happy. She's already lived in a palace. Devahuti, she had so many servants and maidservants who loved her so very, very dearly. Constantly taking care of her every need in Krishna consciousness. She slept on beds that were so soft, and the sheets were clean and pure like the foam on milk. But it was Lord Krishna's desire that Swayambhuva Manu marry her to Kardama Muni. So with great joy and happiness, he approached Kardama Muni, and will you take my daughter's hand in marriage? Kardama Muni was actually a very, very great personality. He was doing so much tapasya that he filled an entire lake with the tears of his ecstatic love for Lord Vishnu. Such a great devotee. And Vishnu would cry in ecstasy to see his tapasya in such mood of devotion. This was Satya Yuga, where the Yuga Dharma was tapasya and meditation. So he accepted Devahuti as his wife. And later on we know that she gave birth to Lord Kapila Dev, avatar of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is what kind of grihastha Swayambhuva Manu was. And he had two primary sons. The eldest was Maharaj Uttanapada. Because he raised his children in such pure Krishna consciousness, Priyavrat was the eldest son. But when it came to Swayambhuva Manu wanting to turn the kingdom over to his children, it's not like the kings today, where you hold on to it to the fag end of your life. We're reading in America, in the news, how the president, he made some mistakes, obviously. But he's not willing to let go of that position because he's too much attached. He's attached to the money that comes with it throughout his life, and he's willing, and the ego of remaining there until his term is finished, whatever. I cannot judge him. But one thing we know is he's very attached to staying in his post. And in Japan, there were emperors of Japan just in the recent years, and they, like in their 90s, late 90s, and the people were just frustrated, get out, let somebody who knows what they're doing get in, and they had to practically rip him out. They had to have riots and everything. But the kings, like Swayambhuva Manu, they're Vaishnavas. They're not attached to being king. They're not attached to their opulence. They're just attached to serving Krishna. And as soon as anyone is qualified within their family to take that position, they give it to them. And generally, they just go into the forest to do tapasya by their own free will. So Priyavrat was the eldest son. But he was like the Kumaras. He did not want to get married. He did not want a kingdom. He just wanted to chant and think about Krishna constantly. His guru was Narada Muni. Narada Muni made many young people into great renunciates, as we know. So he went to the top of a big, big mountain, and he had his father's blessings. Yes, if this is what you want, you go. Such a father. And he was up there with Narada Muni just performing his bhajan and his sadhana. And his younger son, Uttanapada, he took the kingdom. Swayambhuvamana was very responsible. He understood someone has to do this service. So he trained Uttanapada to be such a good king. And who was Uttanapada's son? Dhruva Maharaj. This is what kind of dynasty Swayambhuvamanu created. Due to the force of his bhakti, his humility, his service attitude toward Krishna and every living being, his grandson was the great Dhruva Maharaj. Of course, later on, one of his descendants was Maharaj Vena. So no matter how good you do, still, you cannot be attached. But then Vena's son was Prithu Maharaj. So if you just continue on, no matter how many obstacles, Krishna will save you and make you a success in your mission. So Uttanapada, Dhruva Maharaj, and so many descendants, but at a certain point, after Maharaj Prachini Barhishat, a great king who became a surrendered soul due to the mercy of Shri Narada Muni, there was no more descendants of Maharaj Uttanapada. So Swayambhuvamanu personally went to the top of that mountain and requested Priyavrat, I know you want to be a renunciate. No doubt, it's very nice. I gave all my blessings to you, but there's a need for a king, and we require you. So you please come down and be king. Priyavrat had no inclination at all. He was very happy living in Narada Muni's brahmachari ashram in the top of the mountain. He had no inclination at all. But Swayambhuvamanu, he was not asking because of some attachment. He was asking because of his love for Krishna and his love for his son. He understood this service must be done. It's a valuable service to Krishna. It's his desire. And ultimately, the perfection of life is to put aside our own personal desires for the higher desire of Krishna. So Swayambhuvamanu was preaching in this way. However, it wasn't easy because Narada Muni was on one side and Swayambhuvamanu was on another side, and they're both Mahajans. And it said, Mahajano yena gatasa bandha, you have to follow in the footsteps of Mahajans. So here's two Mahajans. One's a renunciate and one's a grihastha. One's encouraging you, go on hearing and chanting in the renounced order of life, and the other is saying, perform your seva in pure devotional service with your wife and your children and be a king. So you have to follow in the footsteps of Mahajans. So which Mahajan? It's a difficult situation. So, just to make the vote more convincing, another Mahajan came, Lord Brahma. he was not only Mahajan, but he was the guru for Narada Muni and Swayambhuva Manu, as well as their father. So when a superior Vaishnav comes, immediately there is humility. So Narada Muni, whatever Brahma and Swayambhuva Manu say, that is good. That is what. That is your duty. That is what you should do. And Lord Brahma explained to Priyavrat that you should perform this duty because it is the will of the Lord. You do not have to be afraid, what will happen if I get married? What about house? How will I? What about being a king? Many complications. It's quite simple living on a mountain and just doing your bhajan. But being the king of the world, you have to tax the citizens, you have to punish the rogues and the thieves. You have to have armies and soldiers to protect from enemies. You have to make laws and enact laws. You have to raise family. Very, very important service. A king was responsible for every praja, every living entity within his kingdom. Every blade of grass, every tree, every insect, every bird, every fish in the water, he was responsible that they were protected and that they had all facilities. And most of all, he was responsible that every human being achieves the perfection of Krishna consciousness by living according to the principles of devotional service. Big responsibility. So Brahma explained that you must accept this responsibility. Do not be afraid, because you're doing it for Krishna and you're doing it in Krishna consciousness, you will be pure and perfect. And Swayambhuva Manu was speaking same thing. So Priyavrat became king and followed in the footsteps of his father, Swayambhuva Manu. He became such a great, great personality. Vidura wants to hear about Swayambhuva Manu. Vidura already renounced everything of this world. He already left his home. Krishna left the planet by this time. Yes? He's already renounced everything. But yet he wants to hear the pure devotional service of this great king and grihastha, Swayambhuva Manu. He's eager, longing to hear more and more and more. Because it is the story of Krishna. The story of the intimate, loving reciprocation between Krishna and his devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam Amalam Puranam, it is the spotless Purana. Srimad Bhagavatam is only speaking of undivided, unalloyed surrender to Krishna in the mood of pure love. That's all. There's no other subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, we are very, very eager to hear all these wonderful stories. Because they teach us the ultimate perfection is life. Srila Prabhupada's purport is very beautiful. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of the transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead and his pure devotees. In the absolute world, there is no difference in quality between the Supreme Lord and his pure devotee. Therefore, hearing the topics of the Lord and hearing the character and activities of the pure devotee have the same result, namely the development of devotional service. Is there any questions?
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, as you said, devotee was protected even by, not to seen by anyone else. But then how come she was seen by a Gandharva who fell down from his aeroplane? Devotee.
What did he say?
Devotee was seen by a Gandharva.
That was beyond Swayambhuva Manu's control. She was... They came from above. The people on the street could not see her. But they were so enthusiastic. They came from above, from the clouds, just to see her. But they didn't understand what they were about to see. She was so beautiful that they literally, so bewildered by her beauty, they fell off their planes and fell onto the street themselves. There you go. But they are not ordinary low-class people. They are demigods. Hare Krishna. If you're seen by demigods, it's all right. Is there any other questions?
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, you were explaining about the gopis' love for Krishna and how they were lamenting and totally crying, weeping when Krishna left them to form Mathura, and he didn't even return after killing Kamsa for hundreds of years. So they were totally lamenting on Krishna's separation. We also hear that Krishna reciprocates as according to our desire as you approach him. So gopis wanted Krishna all the time to be with him then. But Krishna, he did not care to their reciprocation. He was away even after hundreds of years after killing Kamsa. So he did not come to Vrindavan after from Mathura. So can you explain how is this?
He reciprocated perfectly with the desire of gopis. The gopis wanted to serve him and please him with their life and soul. And within the heart, he reciprocated with them, and he was ultimately pleased by the gopis. That was their desire. Their desire was not their own sense gratification. The only reason they were in such separation from Krishna is they knew it would please Krishna to be in that separation, because it's such an intense expression of ultimate love. Their desire was not to enjoy Krishna. Their desire was to please Krishna. And in that separation, they pleased him even more than when he was there. Because the intensity of their one-pointed focus of devotion was constantly fixed in remembering him, serving him. Such an ocean of love was being offered to Krishna. Therefore, Krishna perfectly fulfilled their desire. And he was personally there to reciprocate with those desires. Krishna left Vrindavan to increase the service of the gopis and the Brijavasis. He left Vrindavan to further fulfill their desires, to love him and to serve him. So Krishna knows how to reciprocate most perfectly with his devotees. When Krishna was in Dwarka, he told Narada Muni that if I go back to, there's no reason to go back to Vrindavan, because in their separation, the Brijabasis, their love has reached such an ultimate perfection that it can't get any higher. I'm there with them reciprocating that. If I were to come back in a visible form, it could not increase their service or their love. It's already reached such a peak in separation. But actually, Krishna was visible. The gopis and the Brijabasis were seeing Krishna everywhere. In separation, They were remembering him in everything, in separation. And wherever they would remember him, wherever they would see him, Krishna was there, reciprocating in that form. Is there any other questions?